I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Well, one thing's for sure this morning, there are fewer political candidates to keep track of on both sides of the state line. Today, a rundown of major races in Kansas and Missouri. Some were blowouts, others were close, and then there's the Republican contest between Jeff Collier and Kris Kobach that may have everyone holding their breath for weeks. We'll preview the campaign of those left standing. Just how rough and tumble will the run-up to November be? There were ballot issues decided yesterday, too. One could signal that labor unions still have political clout, and the other puts Kansas City landlords on notice. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. The results of the 2018 primaries in Kansas and Missouri are in, and what a night it was. Kansans can now look forward to a three-way affair for governor, a race that will pit Kris Kobach against Laura Kelly and Greg Orman. In the race for that third district congressional seat, it'll be Kevin Yoder seeking a fifth term in Washington against political newcomer Sharice Davids. In Missouri, Right to Work went down to an overwhelming defeat, and voters can brace for what's going to be a blistering campaign between the newly crowned Republican now nominee Josh Hawley and incumbent Claire McCaskill. Good morning, everybody. We'll be running down last night's results in a special hour-long election show today featuring some of the finest journalists and analysts around. And some of the winning candidates will be joining us as well. In fact, we're going to begin with one right now. That's State Senator Laura Kelly, who won a surprisingly easy three-way fight for the Democratic nomination for governor last night. Senator, welcome and congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I'm really glad to be here.
You won with 52% of the vote. Your next closest rival, Carl Brewer, had 20%. Senator, it wasn't supposed to be that easy.
Well, it wasn't that easy, Steve. Trust me, I worked very hard, and I'm thrilled, but really humbled by those results. You know, it's clear that people want change, and it's clear that my message of public schools and infrastructure and the economy resonated with people.
How much of a difference did that endorsement from former Governor Kathleen Sebelius make early on in your campaign?
Well, you know, there's a actually, no way to tell, but you know, I was thrilled to have that endorsement and her support throughout the campaign, and I will continue to have it going into November. I think that you know, Kathleen, in many ways, represents what Kansans want now. You know, they want a nonpartisan, common sense leader to take our state out of the mess that it's. That's been created over the past 8 years. She's pretty no-nonsense, and so am I.
Now, going forward, Senator, you don't even know who the GOP candidate is going to be. How big of a disadvantage is that for you right now?
Actually, no disadvantage at all, Steve. You know, it gives us some time to, you know, get up and running and move forward in the general. You know, they're more the ones who are stalled out at the moment.
Who do you want to run against, Kris Kobach or Jeff Collier?
I want to run against whoever comes out of the Republican primary. You know, I don't think either one of them are good options for the state of Kansas. I think we would just experience four more years of the crisis and turmoil that we've just gone through with the Brownback Collier years. So either one is fine with me. We're prepared for either one.
You have something unusual this fall. That's an independent candidate for governor on the ballot. Kansas hasn't seen anything like that for quite some time, maybe ever. How does that change the math for you?
You know, it honestly doesn't change the math for me. I mean, we calculated that even before I got into the race. And, you know, things are very different now in 2014 or in 2018 than they were in 2014. So I'm confident that voters will really recognize that Greg Orman, you know, has absolutely no record of public service. And I think they'll be skeptical of someone who comes in and essentially tries to buy a place on the ballot.
Okay, the tough question here, Senator. How much sleep did you get last night?
About 4 hours. it was a little hard to sleep.
I bet it was. That's State Senator Laura Kelly, the newly minted Democratic nominee for Kansas governor. Senator, thanks very much, and again, congratulations.
You're very welcome. Take care.
And now with this fresh off her win and undoubtedly with, again, very little sleep, we're joined by Democrat Charisse Davids. She won last night's Democratic congressional primary in Kansas's 3rd District. Charisse, welcome and congratulations to you.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be on.
I think it's safe to say that when this race began, Charisse, you weren't the favorite. How do you explain your win?
Well, a couple of things. One, tons of hard work by so many people. There were so many people who were volunteering and making phone calls and knocking on doors. So one is just a ton of hard work. And then the second piece, I think, has to do with what the 3rd District is looking for. And the 3rd District is looking for change. The 3rd District is looking for someone who wants to listen to the needs and issues that we're dealing with. And, you know, I think that is probably the biggest thing that brought this thing home.
I can't help but wonder, are you surprised that you won this thing?
You know, it's funny. My mindset had me thinking there was no other, you know, no other possibility but for me to win. I was certainly relieved when I woke up this morning and saw the numbers coming in and felt really, really good about it. But, you know, I feel like this is just kind of how I've been living my life, which is, you know, try to push forward and make progress. And I think that's what we've done here.
Charisse Davids is my guest. So you went to bed last night. Johnson County's numbers weren't in. That must have made for a pretty restless night.
Well, I had a pretty busy day yesterday, so, you know, that helped me spend a lot of my energy. You know, I went to bed a little after 1 to make sure that I was ready for today, no matter what the outcome was. So I feel like I'm pretty rested. I got a lot of hours of sleep. At least as compared to a lot of folks.
You know, Brent Welder, your closest rival, won Wyandotte County. I'm wondering, how did you feel about your prospects in Johnson as last night came to an end?
We were feeling really good, knowing that we had put in all the work and the number of doors that we've been knocking and the number of phone calls we were making. I was definitely looking forward to seeing how Johnson County played out, especially, you know, just knowing that we put so much effort into, of course we put effort into Wyandotte as well, you know, but waiting for those Johnson County results, I was still feeling pretty optimistic, even when I left our watch party and headed off to bed. So
in a statement out this morning, you say, Charisse, point blank, that your general election opponent, Kevin Yoder, doesn't know what's going to be coming at him. So my question is, what is going to be coming at him?
You know, I think he just has, because he's never had to face a candidate like me before. I just, you know, I'm looking forward to the way that we're able to get folks motivated, get folks out to the polls. When I say he doesn't know what's coming, it's because he's just never seen a candidate like me before.
You probably only have about 10 cents left in your bank account after this long primary fight. How do you replenish your funds on such short notice to be able to take on Yoder this fall? Because undoubtedly, Kevin Yoder is going to be coming after you right out of the gate here in the days to come.
Right. Well, so, you know, there's a lot to be said for the unity that I think we're going to see across the entire 3rd District, all the Democrats. You know, we made sure the whole time to keep in mind that ultimately, no matter who came through this primary, that we were all going to have to come together. You know, I'm already seeing that. I'm already seeing a lot of folks who are really just interested in making sure that we're working together to flip this seat. And in fact, we're doing a unity luncheon here soon. And I think that that's going to be a huge piece of it. You know, there are a lot of people who are who are just interested in change. And I think, you know, of course, we have to hit the ground running. Part of why I got a lot of rest last night. And we're just going to not slow down, you know.
Charisse, do you expect your
pedal to the metal?
Do you expect your five other rivals to all be at the Unity breakfast today?
Yeah, I think we'll all be there. And as far as I know, everyone is planning on showing up.
Okay.
And everybody's been super cordial up to this point, or, you know, just a lot of excitement for us to have the chance to flip this seat. So.
Okay, that's Charisse David. She's the new Democratic nominee in Kansas's 3rd District. Charisse, again, congratulations. We'll look forward to talking to you again in the fall campaign here.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Now let's break down these other races and these races as well with reporters who have spent months covering these candidates. Joining me now, Jim McLean. He's the Kansas News Service reporter. Jim, always good to have you.
Yeah, hey, Steve. Good to be here.
Brian Grimmett is also here. He's with the Kansas News Service as well, based at KMUW down in Wichita. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
Jim, let me start with you and the Republican race for governor in Kansas. You know, Chris Kobach this morning is the very unofficial winner, leading as he does at this moment by fewer than 200 votes, which is a remarkably close finish in a statewide race. But the race may not be over. Jeff Collier now is taking too many Kobach and Collier.
Right.
Jeff Collier now talking about extending this count and waiting to see what the provisional vote total is. This race may not be decided for weeks, Jim. Do I have that right?
Oh, yeah. It could be weeks. It could be days. It could be weeks. But all we know is it's not over today. So as you indicated, and as I heard Kyle say, Governor Collier, at least today, has no intention of conceding the race and wants to count every vote very carefully. And as has been mentioned previously, there are mail-in ballots and provisional ballots to be counted. So certainly not over. Could be days, could be weeks, but certainly not today.
I can't help but wonder, Jim, again, you've covered these races as I have for too many years, but what does this do to GOP prospects for retaining the office if the candidate, the nominee, can't get out and start running for the office yet?
Well, I'll throw that right back at you, Steve. Who knows, right?
I mean,
we've had so many unconventional things happen in this race, from this exceedingly tight race. I mean, everybody expected it to be relatively close, but like this, I mean, I don't think anybody quite expected this. And then we have this phenomenon of the independent candidate, as you talked to Senator Kelly about, you know, kind of playing with the math in the race. And so certainly it could be a disadvantage for whoever the Republican nominee turns out to be, not to be able to get that running start. But on the other hand, there's going to be plenty of attention paid to this process, and so they won't exactly be out of the limelight.
So why was this race so darn close, Jim?
Well, I don't know, Steve. What do you think?
Yeah.
Seriously, I think it was really close. I'll tell you why I think, one, I just think that Chris Kobach is a very attractive candidate for a certain segment of voters in Kansas, much like President Trump.
Yes.
He has this no-nonsense, won't-back-down, confrontational style, and he smiles while he's in your face, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people like that about him. Jeff Collier and Chris Kobach, as I said in a piece a couple of weeks ago, aren't very different on the issues, but they're very different in style and demeanor. And I think some people saw Chris Kobach and his style and were excited about it, and other people were scared by it. And they saw Collier as a safer alternative. I mean, look at how the Republican establishment lined up behind Collier with the Kansas Farm Bureau and organizations like that, because they saw him as a safer, more predictable candidate. So I just think literally there was this, you know, kind of split right down the middle of the Republican Party on those facets. Plus, I have to think that a lot of Republican moderates might have sat it out waiting to vote for Greg Orman.
You know, Brian, switch to you now and talk about the Democratic primary race and following up my conversation with the winner there, Laura Kelly. You know, she had this overpowering win last night in the Democratic race for governor in this five-way primary. She emerges with 52% of the vote. Same question I asked Jim. Why, Brian? Why did she win so convincingly here?
Yeah, I think she won for a lot of the reasons that she campaigned on. She is a well-known commodity. She has a long legislative background. Democrats kind of know where she stands. She has a good network of support. And, you know, she had the Kathleen Sebelius endorsement and other legislators. And she had the resources and the team to get it done. And she showed that she knows what she's doing. And I think that's why she had kind of this overwhelming victory.
Kathleen Sebelius endorsed her. Was that the end of the race, in a sense, at that point, when you have such a prominent figure like the former governor coming out for one of the candidates and this what came out to, turned out to be a three-way race for the nomination? Was that the determining blow there?
I don't think so. I mean, I have a hard time believing any endorsement, especially in a primary race, is that big of a deal. But that's maybe more me. But I think it was important, but it wasn't the end all. I think people really saw Laura Kelly, Senator Kelly, as the best chance to beat a Republican in the general in an election year where that is a reality. That is a possibility.
You know, Brian, one thing that really struck me last night, the underperformer of the evening may have been Democrat Josh Swatty in this race for governor. Very attractive candidate on any number of levels, had the Western Kansas base going for him. He wound up finishing third. What happened there? Why did the wheels come off in the way that they did?
Yeah, that was a little surprising. I was actually at Josh Swatty's party last night, and everyone there was really disappointed. I don't think they thought it was going to go that poorly for them. And even around the state, I talked to many people who were excited about the freshness that he brought. But ultimately, I think it came down to numbers. He campaigned all over the state, but he had this real focus on rural Democrats. And in the end, there just aren't enough of them who get out to vote to really give him that kind of support. If you look at the map and see which counties the candidates won, Senator Kelly won almost every county that's not named Sedgwick or Ellsworth. And so the Democrats that vote really are in Johnson County and Sedgwick County and in those areas. And that is, I think, what pushed her over the top, is being able to have that name recognition. And Swatty just didn't have that. I mean, he has a political career, but he was young and people just didn't know his name nearly as well as they knew Laura Kelly's or Carl Brewer's.
And Steve, this is Jim McLean. Maybe the wheels didn't come off. Maybe they just were never on.
Well, maybe that's right, and maybe people can never pronounce Josh's last name, but you talk...
He had a great video about that, actually.
He did, and you talk to Democrats these days. They talk about new beginnings. They talk about the value of fresh faces in the wake of the Hillary Clinton loss a couple of years ago. Here's a guy, Josh Swatty, who had that written all over him, and yet, boy, it just never happened.
Right. Exactly right, Steve. It just didn't catch on. And I think that's what he was waiting for that to ignite somehow. And he pushed it. I mean, every time I saw him, he was on the stump and he was, you know, exuding charisma and kind of shouting and wanted to really portray himself as the young, youthful candidate,
yes,
as opposed to Laura Kelly, you know, the veteran, shall we say, of state government. But it just never really caught on.
Let's turn to the general election just for a couple of minutes, gentlemen, here. Jim, you know, Greg Orman now enters the fray. He's the independent candidate for Kansas governor. We haven't seen an independent candidacy of this stature maybe ever in Kansas. Is there a path for an independent for governor in a state like Kansas, Jim?
Well, again, Steve, who knows? Greg Orman certainly thinks that there is. And when you ask him that question, as we often do, as you know, because you've asked him, he bristles at the notion. He believes this is precisely, and we know how important timing is in politics, he believes that this is precisely the right time for an independent candidacy because people are so fed up with the two-party system. And he put out a statement last night, was ready to go, again saying, tonight we learned the results of a closed primaries in which very few Kansans participated. Make no mistake about it, both candidates will put their party and special interests ahead of the Kansas people. And he claims, as an independent, that he'll put the people first. So that could be a very appealing message this year, right? But if you talk to any political scientist, without the party apparatus behind him, even though he's going to be well-funded, you know, you don't have those troops on the ground that get out the vote effort, the yard sign, putter uppers, and all that kind of thing. One wonders, you know, whether there is a path for him, but he certainly thinks that there is.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there. That's Jim McLean and Brian Grimmett, both with the Kansas News Service based here at KCUR. Gentlemen, thanks very much. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, Steve, thank you. Anytime.
We're going to continue our conversation after a short break here. We're going to turn to a preview of that big U.S. Senate race in Missouri, talk about Prop A, why did the right to work vote go down in flames the way it did, and talk more about the Kansas 3rd District congressional race. I'm Steve Kraske. You're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Worried about what tariffs could mean for us here in the heartland? Listen to my conversation with international trade law expert Raj Bala at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow on the show, with the recent announcement that charter school Benjamin Banneker is closing, we look at the oversight of charters and their relationship to their sponsors. Be with us for that conversation tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, we're spinning through the results of Tuesday's primary elections in both Kansas and Missouri. We're going to turn now to the Missouri side, where the election action was significant, but maybe not quite as scintillating as what took place on the Kansas side. With us here to talk about it is KCUR's Erica Hunzinger. Erica, good to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, let's turn to the U.S. Senate race and Josh Hawley, the Republican nominee. Was the size of his win what we expected it to be? Does it even matter in a primary election campaign? Well, what do you think?
It's a majority. He had 58.6% of the vote. That's expected. Now, I think there were two candidates who pulled 9 to 10% of the vote. Had they kind of united and there were fewer candidates, I mean, there were 10 going up against Hawley. You know, it might have been a little bit tighter, but in the end, I don't think it would have mattered that much.
You know, this race, this general election race between Hawley and Claire McCaskill is going to be intense. It's going to be unrelenting from sort of this moment forward. Do you see it that way, too?
I think you're right. We're in for an expensive, negative fight. Hawley's going to keep talking about McCaskill's fundraising that's not in Missouri and her long tenure in Washington. And McCaskill's going to go after Hawley for, you know, what she says is not talking to state residents well enough. And there's going to be a lot of money from political action committees, tons of ads from both the candidates and those PACs.
We're looking at undoubtedly a record amount of money for U.S. Senate race. Every 2 years now, we get a new record,
yeah,
it seems like.
I would
like.
Think so, yeah. For sure.
You know, both Hawley and McCaskill have started these calls for a debate of one kind or another. Josh Hawley, in his acceptance speech last night, requested a very particular format for that. Let's listen to Josh Hawley.
No moderator, no complicated rules, no TV studio, just the two of us debating in the best traditions of our country, like Lincoln and Douglas, but this time on the back of a flatbed truck.
Now, that's a really interesting idea, and he has acknowledged, Josh Hawley has, that Claire McCaskill is a great debater. Is she likely to take him up on this offer?
Yes, in some form. You know, last night before Hawley called for this
flatbed. Truck's kind of cool, though. I like that.
It sounds great. He's actually apparently bringing it to Blue Springs tomorrow. So he's got the truck ready to go.
Put a little hay in the back and off you go, right?
I think McCaskill wants, she said she wants four town hall style debates, which would be moderated and not the no holds barred, I think, that Hawley's looking for. But I do think you're going to see a conversation between the two of them. Whether she'll jump on the back of a truck remains to be seen.
But they'll have to talk this out in the days to come, undoubtedly. Is there a favorite in this race as we sit here today, the day after the primary election? Is there a favorite?
I don't know that we can say that. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I personally don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure I do either. Yeah. Okay, let's turn to some other races that also maybe not quite as prominent. State auditor, the Democratic state auditor, she is up and going to be on the ballot for the first time, I think, this November. Tell us about that race.
That's correct. She was appointed to that seat. She's one of only two Democrats in statewide races or in statewide seats. McCaskill's the other one. So she's going to go up against a sort of political newcomer, Sondra McDowell from Jeff City, won 32% of the vote among four different candidates. She was the assistant attorney general under Chris Koster. She's investigated securities fraud with the current Secretary of State's office. So she's been in state, you know, in state government itself, just not politics. That is to say, Galloway has about $1 million to spend, and McDowell only has about $20,000 or so.
And there's going to be a big argument about whether Sandra McDowell, I don't believe she's a CPA. That might be a factor in this race, if I understand
she's,
right.
She's an attorney.
She's an attorney.
Yes.
Okay, so not a CPA, and that's that issue comes up in these races when one candidate is not a CPA. Okay, let's turn to another race. Again, for Jefferson City fans, this race got a lot of attention. It's the seat now held by Rob Schaff in the 34th District. This is St. Joseph, Missouri, but it spills down into Platte County in our neck of the woods. This was a grudge match that pitted Tony Luchtemeyer against Harry Roberts. Luchtemeyer was seen as the candidate of former Governor Eric Greitens. Roberts was backed again by the well-known senator up there, Rob Schaff. What happened there?
Well, sure, it was a close vote. It was about 1,000 that separated them. Roberts got the win in Buchanan County. Luchtemeyer took Platte County. Overall, he had about 54% of the vote, and he thinks that the GOP is actually going to unite because they want to beat the Democratic candidate, who is Martin Rucker. He's former NFLer, former Mizzou football player. He's got some support. Now, I think the key here was, it's interesting that Schaff has always been about calling out dark money donors, and that's the nonprofits that don't have to reveal their donors.
Right.
I think that made the difference in this race. There was a conservative PAC that spent about $300,000 to put out negative ads against Harry Roberts, and a lot of it came from a nonprofit that doesn't have to reveal its donors. And just one more thing to mention about Luchtemeyer. He's kin to Congressman Blaine Luchtemeyer, who's in the Missouri 3rd
District.
I was wondering
that, actually.
Yeah, that's great.
What's the relationship?
I think they're cousins once removed. Our intern had that figured out. But also, Luchtemeyer's wife worked for Greitens as a legal counsel.
That's right. Yep. And there's a sense here that a Democrat can be competitive in this race. This
totally.
Is not a lopsided district by any stretch.
Totally.
Okay. Moving on down the ballot here and closer to home, Jackson County Executive Frank White won and won easily last night. Does he have a Republican opponent this fall?
No Republican challenger. He'll have a Green Party challenger. So essentially, he'll probably keep the seat that he was appointed to.
You would think.
Yeah, he told us last night that he thinks it's a really good indication that voters still trust him, even with the Jackson County Detention Center issues that have been going on.
I was
going
to say, clearly, he's got some very big issues facing him as he moves forward here. Okay. How about the residential rental inspections ballot initiative? This was restricted just to Kansas City, Missouri. Landlords opposed it, Erica. How did that thing shake out?
Well, that was a 55% to 44% win for question one. So Kansas City is going to get the rental inspection program. It's going to be run by the Department of Health. Landlords are going to have to pay $20 per unit per year so that the city can investigate tenant complaints. Backers say this is a win for tenants who live in unsafe conditions, but the landlords and folks who sided with them said it's going to lead to an increase in rents, or possibly could.
Okay, a contentious fight, but one easily won on the inspection side of the ledger on that one.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, and you say after Prop A and the U.S. Senate vote for Josh Hawley, the top story in Missouri today is a county prosecutor outcome way across the state in St. Louis. Tell us about that one.
It's a huge upset in St. Louis County. Bob McCullough is the prosecutor who impaneled the grand jury to look at whether to charge the officer in the Mike Brown shooting.
Right.
He lost to Ferguson Councilman Wesley Bell, who ran on reforming how crimes are prosecuted, eliminating cash bail and not seeking the death penalty. There's no Republican primary, so Bell is the first black man to hold the prosecutor's office, and McCullough had been there for 27 years.
I was going to say, Bob McCullough was a household name over in St. Louis, so an extraordinary thing there. Let's turn just finally to ballot initiatives for the fall, Erica, including one that's designed to bring ethics reform back to state government. Finally, it's called the Clean Missouri Initiative. That'll be a big issue on the ballot in November. What are some of the others there?
It's a full slate. And just to note that Clean Missouri also has redistricting changes as part of that, too. So it's not just ethics reform. There's some redistricting. There are three medical pot measures that are all going to be on the same ballot.
Wow.
All of them have slight differences. Two are constitutional amendments. They put different size taxes on the pot itself. And the
third is medical marijuana.
This is medical
as
marijuana.
Opposed to recreational, right?
Correct. There's no recreational. There are three medical pot measures. The third would change state statute. And then the Secretary of State says that if more than one of them passes, the courts will have to decide which one takes effect.
Okay.
There's also a minimum wage question. It would go up to $12 an hour by 2023. Currently, it's $7.85. And I just want to mention that there is a gas tax question on the ballot that would increase our gas tax 10 cents a gallon over 4 years. Just a reminder, Missouri hasn't raised its tax since 1990s. On that.
When you were just a little girl, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's KCUR's Erica Hunzinger. Thanks for the good roundup. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, let's turn to a different issue here. Prop A that got nationwide attention last night, the right to work vote. It went down to a flaming defeat. Joining me now is union expert Jake Rosenfeld. He's a Washington University Associate Professor of Sociology, and he's author of What Unions No Longer Do, that details the consequences of labor's decline. Jake, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Did this vote last night, the outcome, did it surprise you?
It did. Certainly the scale of it. The kind of size of this victory for organized labor was pretty stunning.
And what does this vote say about organized labor in this country today? What's the takeaway here?
Well, I think the takeaway here is that when put before the voters, there's growing signs that labor has real strong support. So in 1978, there was a right to work initiative on the ballot here in Missouri, and it went down by 20 points. Last night, Prop A lost by 35 points. There are, as did some back of the envelope calculations, four times as many people voted against this measure as there are union members in the entire state of Missouri.
Wow.
So this is a victory that went far and wide and well beyond the kind of really narrow set of union members that remain.
And very similar to a vote that took place in Missouri back in the 1970s, I believe, Jake.
That's right, 1978. It was on the ballot, and it was defeated then as well.
So can we say, in the wake of this vote, are we seeing a resurgence of support for labor across the country in general here?
Yeah, I think unions have seen encouraging signs of late with growing popular support, if you look at polling. And that's especially true among younger Americans. The exception had been right to work. Generally, right to work polls pretty well. If you don't know the issue, you're not a union member, well, who doesn't support someone's right to work? So union opponents have won this branding game. But here, the issue was put before the voters and was soundly defeated. So I think that's a major symbolic victory.
I can't help but wonder, to what extent will last night's vote encourage union backers in other states where right to work remains an issue, Jake?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of next big question, whether some of the states that have recently turned right to work, states like Wisconsin, Michigan, West Virginia, and Kentucky, whether voters and union supporters there decide to put these up on the ballot as well.
To what extent was all this just about money being spent? I mean, the anti-right to work crowd spent huge here, far more than what the right to work groups spent. How big of an issue, a factor was that, do you think?
I think that was definitely a factor. I've seen reported that opponents of Prop A outspent supporters by a margin of about 3-1.
Wow.
And so that matters, but there's a question of why the supporters of Prop A didn't put money into this measure. And, you know, my sense is they saw this going down pretty early and decided to hold their fire.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there with Jake Rosenfeld, again, a Washington University Associate Professor of Sociology. He's author of What Unions No Longer Do. Jake, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, if you're just joining us this morning, we're running down all the election results in Missouri and Kansas last night, and it was definitely a big night. Now, for more reaction and analysis here, I'm joined by Kansas State Senator Barbara Beaulieu, who hails from the 7th District in Northeast Johnson County. Senator, nice to have you back again. Welcome.
Thank you.
John Gibson is the chairman of the Kansas Democratic Party. He's with me here in the studio. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Amy Jeffries is with the Kansas News Service based at KCUR. Amy, good morning.
Hi there.
Barbara, you endorsed a pair of Democrats in these primaries. One of them was Laura Kelly for governor, the other Tom Nierman for the 3rd District congressional seat. This made a lot of news, and you've been punished by your party as a result. Any regrets today about making the calls that you did?
No, because point being, people need to stand up and speak for what they believe is the right choice, wherever they are, and I still support those people. And it is really about the voters making the choices, and I am a voter. Mm-hmm. And I get to make those choices too. So, no, and we will move forward and see who ends up being winners, ultimately, if we can even figure out who won last night, too.
That's still an issue that's very much up in the air here. Recent Kansas history suggests that a Republican hasn't succeeded another Republican for governor for a very long time, John Gibson. Why is that?
I think there's a strand of political thinking in Kansans that likes alternating control of the Kansas government.
A Democrat hasn't succeeded a Democrat either, I should
point out.
That's
correct. Yeah. That is correct. That's exactly right. And I think we have a very strong Democratic nominee this year. Senator Laura Kelly is going to be a spectacular candidate and a great governor.
You know, Chris Kobach said it last night that history I'm referring to here, Amy, is going to make it extra tough for a Republican to win this year. Do you buy that? Is Kansas history a factor in these elections?
I think it's being written right now.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're looking at is whether or not, you know, Kansas is kind of on the precipice of whether that's sort of continuing a legacy that might belong to the likes of Sam Brownback and following that along with Jeff Collier, whether that is, you know, going back down the path that was paved by Kathleen Sebelius when she was the Democratic governor, sort of playing the moderate on the political scene in many cases, or whether, you know, we're going with a Chris Kobach or who paves a new path in one way, or a Greg Orman as an independent who paves a new path in another. I think that's really what we're watching to see what's happening right now.
If our listeners have questions for our very good panel as to the road ahead in Kansas politics, 816-235-2888 is the number. 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, John Gibson, we talked earlier in this show with Laura Kelly. She won last night in a tough, you know, in theory, a tough primary field with 52% of the vote. Why did she win by so much?
I think that looking at this, you know, after the election, we can clearly conclude that her message of responsible government and taking care of our priorities in Kansas resonated with the Democratic electorate. You know, she did win over 50% of the Democratic electorate, and I believe, as I was counting it, over 70 counties she carried across Kansas.
Wow.
So the Democrats are very united and excited to move forward into the 2018 general election.
Does that make your job easier as head of the party to have a united party behind you?
Absolutely. And I've had the sense in my travels around the state that the party's very united. Everywhere I have gone, every county that I've attended a county party meeting, the Democrats there have been very excited for all of our candidates and have been unanimous in saying that we are supporting our nominee, whoever that may be. And now we have our nominees, so we're ready to go.
Senator Beaulieu, how surprised were you by Laura Kelly's, the size of her win last night against Carl Brewer and Josh Swatty?
As an insider who knows her capabilities, I was not surprised. And I mean, there was no way to know. We've never had in my lifetime that many Democratic candidates in the primary. So I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, retrospect is always great, and it doesn't surprise me. And she ran a great campaign, and she won, and onward she goes.
You know, John Gibson, I'm still puzzling myself over the relatively weak performance by Josh Swatty last night. He, you know, on so many different levels, seems like a very appealing candidate. What happened there?
You know, Josh is a friend of mine. I like Josh, and I really appreciate the energy he brought into this race. Josh did a 105 county tour going all across Kansas, and I think that really brought some energy and excitement into the Democratic Party. I just think that, you know, in the end, Senator Kelly's message resonated with the Democratic primary voters in Kansas, and it's going to resonate with the general election voters as well.
Yeah. Senator Beaulieu, is there a sense of unity today within the Kansas GOP, or is it something different than that?
That's a tough question. I don't have a good answer for that because I'm not with everybody.
Yeah.
I can tell you to me, there is a rift in the party. There has been, there continues to be, the fact that it's either a conservative or a moderate, and it's very clear those delineations when people are running. You don't see that in, like, Josh Schwade versus Laura Kelly. There wasn't some major split or rift in a party situation. Mm-hmm. And we very clearly have that difference in Kansas. We have had that for years. And as we know, in the last election, it changed. And then now we're, you know, people seem to be moving back. At least those who voted and were allowed to vote made that change.
Now, Amy, speaking of splits inside of a party, look at the Kansas GOP, the vote for governor last night. Arguably, the three leading candidates, Kobach, Collier, and Insurance Commissioner Ken Selzer, all conservative. The moderate candidate, Jim Barnett, got exactly, I think, 9% of the vote last night. If there's a split between conservatives and moderates within the Kansas GOP, the moderates don't seem to have a whole lot of allies, at least today.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the primary last night, it appeared that it was a different split that showed up to vote, a split between, your Trump-style Republican and your traditional Republican, if you will, in the vein of a Bob Dole. And I think that is how Collier and Kobach aligned themselves, and that's who showed up.
Again, you wonder if moderates have a leg to stand on, Senator Beaulieu, based on that gubernatorial vote last night.
Well, I will tell you, there are many moderates supporting Jeff Collier. So certainly in Johnson County, that was the message that was going out.
Think they voted for Jeff Collier because
they felt,
why?
They felt like
Jeff Collier's not a moderate.
I agree. But they felt like he was the one candidate who could beat Kobach. And so they put their eggs in that basket.
They're voting strategically as opposed to where they were ideologically then.
Yes. So we don't really know what that vote shows because I think we'll find out way more when we actually have a general election. But honestly, that was the mantra. You look on pictures of many moderates, they were with Jeff Collier in a picture the day before the election. And, you know, he was pulling for that, and many of them supported him.
You know, John Gibson, again, chairman of the Kansas Democratic Party, who would you rather face in the general election for governor, Kobach or Collier? And a lot of people would say it's got to be Kobach.
I think that's up to the Republicans as to who they nominate. Either of those.
But who do you want?
Either of those are people who will finish second to Laura Kelly in the gubernatorial election.
But would Chris Kobach make your life easier?
You know what? I think that as much as the conventional wisdom has been that Chris Kobach is the easier opponent for Democrats, I think the reality is that Jeff Collier is not someone who has demonstrated himself to be a great campaigner either. Mm-hmm. I think that he has the entire legacy of Sam Brown back that he has to live down if he is the Republican nominee. And I think either way, the Democrat, Laura Kelly, is going to be the superior option and the choice of the Kansas voters.
Amy, who break this tie for me. Who do you think is the easier candidate for Democrat Laura Kelly to face off against this fall?
Well, I am not the one to break the tie. The voters, of course, will be the ones to do that. And a lot will have to do with the turnout, perhaps in the congressional races as well.
But what's the conventional wisdom out there?
I mean, I think that the conventional wisdom is based on recent polling, and their scant polling at that. But recent polling would tell you that Laura Kelly does better up against Kobach than against Collier.
Okay. In the 3rd District congressional race, John, Democrat Charisse Davids, again, will be a first-time general election candidate. You've got a rookie here against a seasoned veteran in Kevin Yoder. Do you think she can pull it off, and why should we think that?
I firmly believe Charisse is going to pull this off. When I first met her, when she was considering running for the 3rd District nomination and other candidates had been in the race for months, I told her, you're just starting too late. You'll never be able to catch up. I appreciate your desire to serve, but you need to look elsewhere. And she said, no, I think I can do this. And she was right. She proved me wrong. And I think she's going to prove a lot of doubters wrong for the general election.
What was it about her candidacy that caught people's attention?
She hasn't
start late.
She did, but she brought incredible energy to the race. I think she's someone who is very personable, and I think she has a really compelling story that really has resonated with voters in the 3rd District.
Barbara Beaulieu, what do you think about Charisse Davids's chances here in the 3rd District race?
I don't know the answer to that, and I am very curious to see what happens as well. I have not even met her yet, so I look forward to that. And as always, as me as a voter, I'm always looking for the best person. But I think one of my messages in endorsing Tom Nierman before was that I support people who are in a more centrist, moderate viewpoint, and I haven't studied her positions well enough to know where she fits in that realm. So maybe Kevin Yoder will move a little more to the middle. I don't know. That would be my goal anyway. I think that we need more centrist thought in what is dominating our government now.
You know, Kevin Yoder, John, begins the campaign with $2 million in his bank account. Charisse Davids probably doesn't have much following this long primary campaign. How do you overcome money like that in a short election window in the run-up to November?
Certainly, Charisse Davids is going to be something of an underdog when you put it like that, but I also have seen her beat the odds once, and energy and people matter more than money in politics in the end, and I think that Democrats are going to really unite not only in the 3rd District but across the state and across the nation for this very important congressional district, because we have a chance to make a difference right now.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there. I want to thank Kansas State Senator Barbara Beaulieu. Thanks again for coming in, Barbara.
Thanks for having me. Great
John Gibson, Chairman of the Kansas Democratic Party. John, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Steve.
Amy Jeffries from the Kansas News Service. Amy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Be with us tomorrow. We'll hear from Kansas City teens about being in the national poetry competition, Louder Than A-Bomb. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Kathleen Pointer. Find us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Kathleen Pointer. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.